Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, and I'm sitting around with Bill Brigoli.
The very patient Bill Brigoli.
Bill McCuddy.
I couldn't be happier that we've started this podcast.
And joining us, always welcome
because Neil was late,
is Mike Sargent.
In living color.
There you go. And we're talking about Ben is Back, the new Julia Roberts, Lucas Hedges, directed by his father Peter Hedges film. We're talking about If Beale Street Could Talk, which opens this week, limited and wider in a few weeks from now. We're talking about this Alfonso Cuarón movie called Roma. And we're talking about the directorial debut of actor Paul Dano. He's got a movie called Wildlife with Carey Mulligan and Bill.
And
went
Jake
to
Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal and Bill went to a big to-do here today. He'll tell
we
you
We are also going
to
ask our resident black guest this week.
Yes, as we've talked about Green
As we
Book.
Always do, why Widows isn't making any money.
Well, the other day we were talking about, on this podcast, we were talking about Widows and Green Book, and three white guys sitting around talking about African-American themed movies, and Bill Brigoli aptly said, where's Mike Sargent when we need him to get the black perspective on this? So we will get that perspective from Mike Sargent.
Should we say African-American perspective, Mike? What's the proper term?
It depends on how old you are.
In these politically correct times, we want to get it right. I don't know why Green Book wasn't the number one movie over Thanksgiving, but we don't have to start there. Where do you want to start, oh great leader?
Let us start with Ben is Back. Which is, am I the only one that saw
that? Should be called Julia is Back.
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Did you
but
see it?
I didn't see it
now.
For a while.
All right.
We got it, by the way. We have screeners of it.
Well, no, Ben is Back stars Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges. And Lucas Hedges was also in Boy Erased, which we discussed on this podcast with Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe. He was sent to pray away the gay conversion therapy camp or something like that. And that was... written and directed by
Joel Edgerton.
And now they're making
Beautiful Boy is Back, which is about a gay. all right, sorry.
So Ben is Back. Lucas Hedges plays this kid who is highly addicted to many drugs, opiates, heroin, coke. He's just a fucking mess. And they sent him to a rehab facility, which he, against the advice of his sponsor, skips out of the rehab center to be home for one day with his family on Christmas.
Christmas Eve he leaves, right?
Well, I don't... Was it Christmas Day?
So let's play the game we introduced a couple of weeks ago where...
Well, let me tell you more.
I'm just going to set it up for you, so because I want to put more pressure on you.
Sure.
So let's play the game. We haven't seen the movie... You have convinced us to go.
I've seen Beautiful Boy.
You haven't seen Ben is Back.
So,
Mike, you're new. So the game is,
I'm going to tell you. About
Neil has seen it,
and then you're going to tell me if after I talk
about
it,
he's going to convince us.
Interest in seeing it or not.
Go or no go.
Okay.
So he shows up, and I think it is Christmas Eve day, but it could be Christmas Day, and. The sister is flipping out. It's like, oh, God,
wait,
no.
You saw the movie. Is it Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
I don't remember. I mean, you know, it's one of those 2 days.
Right. They pull up, and he's in the driveway, and the sister freaks out.
The sister's like, oh, God.
That's all in the trailer.
Let's completely ruin the holiday.
Does he
now.
Pull up with Timothée Chalamet?
But Julia Roberts makes a deal with him because she wants to send him right back to the rehab facility and says, okay, here's the deal. You can stay for the one day, but... You don't let me out of your sight for the entire day. You go to the bathroom. I'll put the door stays open. I will stand, you know, I won't look at you go to the bathroom, but I'm standing by the door. And you get, like, you are not being let.
So this guy has been a complete fuck up as a kid. Are there any flashbacks to show what a bad kid he's been?
There are no flashbacks, but there are stories that he tells. You know, like, what is that famous thing that you... I love that thing that you do when you're saying exposition theater or something.
Yeah.
Like, tell that story about the...
Action Jackson, the movie. Did you ever see that, Mike? Where
of course.
They come in and... who's the sergeant? It's like... Action Jackson's like sergeant.
Carl Weathers, you're talking about?
Carl Weathers, and Action Jackson walks in and he's like, well, if it isn't Action Jackson, the man, hard scrapple from the streets, who, and then he tells the whole backstory of the guy, like, 30 seconds.
So along the way, in Ben is Back, he tells his mother, he tells his sister, he tells somebody else that he runs into stories about, you know, 3 years ago I did blank, blank, blank. You know, so
okay.
There are no flashbacks.
So the picture is painted.
But along the way, you get to hear stories about how completely screwed up this kid is.
Got it.
And what he, desperation to get these drugs, all the things that he has done. I mean, for example, people come up to him and start yelling and screaming at him, and Julia Roberts won't let him out of his sight. So he's only, what's that about? So he'll say, well, do you really want to hear what I did to this with this guy?
Right.
You know, she goes, do I really want to hear it? And he goes, no, you don't. And she goes, all right, tell me anyway. So he'll tell the story, you know. And she goes,
is he likable? Is Lucas?
Yes, he's very likable because he's trying very, very hard
not
to do drugs for the 24 hours that he's there. And he
Let me guess, he has some drugs hidden somewhere in his room.
There are drugs hidden all over the place.
Yeah.
In the attic of the house, there are drugs.
Right.
Well, but people, Julia Roberts can't believe, like, this happened, like, you were living under the roof, and you did this.
In a stupid way that undercuts her character, she's great? Is she going to get Oscar nominated?
I don't know. It's a good question. But I will tell you
that's
that
the only kind I ask.
She gives a good performance. Lucas Hedges is terrific. The sister, I can't think of the actress who plays sister, is really.
Is there
good.
A dad in all this?
There is a dad played by Courtney B. Vance.
Wait, Julia Roberts is married to Courtney B. Vance?
It's her second marriage.
Okay.
And Lucas Hedges is not, obviously, that dad's biological kid, nor is Lucas Hedges' sister. But they have two young children that are like 5, 6 years old
right.
that are biracial children that
Got
are
it.
A product of the marriage of Roberts and Vance.
Right.
But Vance's character, like Lucas Hedges, like when he shows up, Vance is like, you're a fuck up. You should never have come here. This is all on you. You screwed this up, you know. And he starts complaining later to Julia Roberts and he goes, you shouldn't be down on him. You know, like I couldn't afford this, you know. $2,000 a day rehab place that you're staying in. Like, he's the one that insisted that you went to the finest, you know. So, it's interesting. Something happens halfway through, which I won't give away, but it becomes kind of like a caper in a way.
Oh.
And I like the movie. Is it a great movie?
It's not a cliched relapse that
no.
happens?
No,
okay.
No, no.
Okay.
It's not
okay.
a great movie, but it's a good movie. They sent me a screener. We vote for the Critics' Choice Awards, BFCA. So, I mean, I watched it on a screener with my wife. We both thought it was quite good. Is it worth full price at the box office? It might be. Might be. It, you know, it's not a comedy. It's a serious subject. Very little humor in it, you know.
And his
whereas
father,
Lucas Hedges did provide the humor in Manchester by the Sea, which is an extremely serious movie.
But this is utterly humorless, you're saying.
Utterly, not utterly. I'd say
Lucas's
95%
dad,
humorless.
Lucas's dad directed, right?
It was directed by Peter Hedges, and he wrote and directed it, and I think he wrote the part for his son, Lucas Hedges. Oscar-nominated for Manchester by the Sea, and also last year in... what was he in last year, Lucas Hedges? He was in...
well, in this year, he's in...
Well, I said Boy Erased, but
right.
last year he was in the movie that you like, Bill, very much, Greta Gerwig movie. He was in...
oh, right, right. He was
Lady
in...
Bird.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Yeah.
So he's up-and-coming... Well, he's not even up-and-coming.
No, he's
Academy
doing great.
Nominated.
He's doing fine without our help.
He's up. he's come, you know. But it was, so I recommend that. So let's play the game. From my description...
Well, wait, one last thing before you say this. I think I speak for everyone listening when I go, Julia Roberts hasn't had a big,
great...
You got a
TV series coming up.
Yeah, she's going to get Emmy nominated.
Yeah, she has a
that.
TV series, The Homecoming, right?
Is that Netflix?
Yeah, or Amazon. So is she like worth the price of admission? Just people who've been waiting since Aaron Brockovich for Julia Roberts because she's done a lot of like just
this
ordinary
is, no,
movies.
This is not the Aaron Brockovich performance.
But is it her comeback in terms of, oh my God, Julia Roberts,
no.
she's back.
She does a good perfunctory performance. I think Lucas Hedges is more the revelatory performance. Well, it's not really revelatory in the sense that I've seen him be great in other movies, but he's really the standout in the movie. She's just kind of there, and she does her job well, but it's really about Lucas Hedges.
All right, I'll take the lead. Based on what you have said, and I've never done this before, because everything you advise I normally don't like, I'll go see it now. Actually, I have it in a pile. It's at the bottom of the pile because it hasn't
been.
It's
not great. It's good.
Okay, don't talk me out of it.
Okay.
Okay, I will go.
Goalie.
Well, I have no choice, right? We got to vote for these awards. We're all going to watch it.
Well, right. If that was not in the mix, would you see it from my description?
Maybe, maybe not.
Mike Sargent.
Well, you know, I have to say, the only really interesting part here, because this sounds so much like A Beautiful Boy to me, even
the
down
Steve
to
Carell.
The Steve Carell film,
which
about
you could talk. We have never talked. About
have any?
Movie
you've never talked
podcast.
About it. Well, Steve Carell movie. He plays a father of a son who's, you know, on drugs. They put him in rehab, and he escapes, and he goes back to rehab, and of course he keeps making all these bad decisions. And then
see, I didn't
he goes
see that.
To,
this, sound, yeah. this does sound
and
like
now
the
Steve
same
Carell
movie.
Is remarried. But then he decides to go live with the mom who remarried a black guy. Ooh, another plot point.
This
and
does sound a lot like
it does.
The same
it's
movie.
Like, and I'm like, the Steve Carell or Timothy Chalamet
well, how
show?
How did you like that movie?
Well, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I mean, it has, as you're watching it, you kind of realize what's going to happen, where the story's headed. So you kind of, you know, you're kind of waiting. I don't want to give anything away, but if you see a lot of movies, then you kind of know. So when you're telling me this, it's like, okay, this almost sounds like a play. It's like, what's that all about? Well, this is what happened. You know, it kind of, but then when you talk about the heist part.
Well, I didn't say now heist. I said caper.
Caper. All right, the caper part.
I won't give it away.
That's
something
probably the most interesting
thing. Where they have
thing.
To, yeah, it's
a caper.
The well, second half, is it's like a very
like
different
caper.
Kind of movie. If they don't figure this out,
I like
catch
capers.
This part. Yeah.
No, I can. I'm not going to give it away. I know exactly what you're talking about now that you've explained it. So, but
me or Mike?
No, you.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, I don't know what
he's
talking about.
Because he's a drug addict and he needs money. So, okay. So somebody gets robbed and goes missing
and
he gets accused
gets
of it. Sorry. Spoiler alert. But I'm telling you, I'm just guessing. So
there's something.
Did you
like that?
So will you go see it based on what Neil said?
Well, they sent it to me, so I'm going to watch it.
Right.
You know, right.
Yeah, for free.
People,
I'd like you to continue.
People listening hate
boy,
for us to say they
sent
it to us.
Well, all right. The thing about Beautiful Boy is that it's
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell.
Who's the kid?
Timothy Chalamet.
Timothy Chalamet. There's
only
every
two kids working right now. It's either Lucas Hedges or Timothy Chalamet. They're in everything.
Every
right.
woman I know, like older and older, they find him attractive. It's like he's sort of like a fantasy for a lot of women. I don't know.
My daughter included.
Yeah, exactly. Like women
they
from
want
20
him.
To their women.
We
in
watch
their 50s,
Beautiful Boy.
Like Timothy Chalamet. And I asked the woman, I said, so what is he like? Oh, I like his face. Okay, he's got a gentle face.
All
right. So gentle-faced
well, like
Timothy Chalamet
the,
is a drug addict. It's really about less about Timothy Chalamet than it is about Steve Carell and how people who are, you know, kids especially, but anybody who's a real drug addict or alcoholic, the effect it really has on the family. And he really wants to understand. He wants to help his son. He does everything. And I don't
well, this
when
is
I say
this
everything,
sounds
he
like
does
the same.
He had a beautiful boy and he doesn't understand yep. what happened
right.
to his beautiful
this really
boy.
Sounds basically. Like the same movie.
And they
well,
even use
but,
the John Lennon song in there.
Well, I don't know if this happens in your movie, Neil, but Chalamet literally says, not in so many words, but kind of says, I like getting high. Leave me alone.
No.
This is. I
Lucas
feel
Hedges,
good when I do this.
Lucas Hedges really regrets that it's completely screwed him up.
Right.
I will tell
well,
you
Timothy
once.
Chalamet
I will tell you
says,
one scene,
"I'm sorry," a bazillion times. In this.
I will tell you this one little scene. It's not ruining anything. They're in a mall. Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges, and Lucas.
First
Hedges,
time I'm sure Julia Roberts has ever been in a mall.
And Lucas Hedges, there's and they're in the food court, and there's this couple sitting at the food court, older couple, and Lucas Hedges says hello to the guy, and the guy just nods hello, but you could tell that the guy doesn't really, like, oh, hi, how you doing, but doesn't really know who he is, even though. So Julia Roberts goes over to the guy, and he goes, you don't remember who my son is, but when he was 9 years old, the guy's a doctor. I uh-huh. brought you to him, and you prescribed opiates for him, and it completely screwed up his life. I hate uh-huh. your guts. I hope you die. And the guy is
yeah, just that's like, not a spoiler.
Speechless. The guy is just like, and the wife is like, the guy is just like, speechless.
Right.
It's just the guy didn't even you know. So
that sounds like a great scene.
Yeah, there are a lot that of stuff. Like
I like the way Neil acted it.
Yeah,
I know. That was
it
good,
sounds
Neil.
Like a great
and,
scene I would like to have seen for the first time in the movie.
Well, anyway, I like the movie. So but Beautiful Boy sounds I watched the trailer.
Well,
it's kind of like plotting and
well, no, it's actually, you know, like I said, I will give it to Steve Carell and that's an interesting thing because I would love to in this conversation today talk about comedy and drama, how they're related, you know, because Steve Carell is yet another comedian who was known for being hilarious, who's transitioned over to being this really serious actor who could potentially win an Oscar for the work he's doing, just like Tom Hanks, just like Robin Williams, just like
a number of those funny guys do that.
You know, a lot of funny guys who just decide, all right, I don't want to be funny anymore. I'm going to be totally serious. I didn't see the Saturday Night Live, but I read about how he went on and
Well, this isn't his first time doing that.
Foxcatcher. This is what he's been doing.
We've talked many times.
What was the in that movie? What was the
Foxcatcher?
Yeah, who was the guy that he played? The famous billionaire.
DuPont.
Yeah. He played with the.
But we've talked about the comedian that's desperate to be taken seriously, and I think Carell has the chops. I mean, he's good in Beautiful Boy.
He's very good.
So you saw Beautiful Boy?
I did.
So would you recommend Beautiful Boy?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm really curious to now see Ben is back, because if they really are the same movie, it's like my theory about Hollywood puts out two of everything every year. It's like Noah's Ark, and it's like...
Did you see Beautiful Boy? Bill
no, Burrell? I didn't. That's why they asked me if I'd see it, and I don't know.
I don't know if I want to. I mean, I feel like I just saw the movie.
Well, Ben is back. When you're describing Ben is back, I'm like, huh. That's where I thought you were talking about Beautiful.
So, right. I know. See, I didn't even get the... you made a Timothy Chalamet reference in the middle of it. I didn't get it until now.
You know.
So here's what I'd like to play this game again, and I'd like you to take the lead on the game, Mike, because there's a movie that opens limited this weekend and wider in a few weeks called If Beale Street Could Talk. And you saw the movie. None of us did. And I hear a lot of buzz about this movie and the fact that it was directed by... Is it his sophomore effort or just his next film, Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight?
His third film.
Okay, so it's the follow up.
It's the follow up to Moonlight
that he's done since Moonlight, director Barry Jenkins. Yeah. And I'd like you to tell us about the movie, and I'd like your opinion on the movie.
Well, you know, If Beale Street Could Talk is a very famous novel, and
who wrote the novel?
James Baldwin. It's a very famous novel from James Baldwin, and it was written at a time where, you know, let's just say the rights of people of color was really, you know, we were literally just post Jim Crow, you know. It's still Jim Crow existed in this country. And the whole point of the story, I believe, at the time that it was written, was to give, and again, a literary audience was probably more white folks than black folks, but to give, you know, people an insight to what black life is like. He says in the beginning of the book, which they actually put in the film, that Beale Street, every black person comes from a Beale Street, a black neighborhood, someplace
where... Beale Street is in
Memphis.
New Orleans.
Memphis, yes.
Memphis, I'm sorry.
So why Beale Street? Because it takes place in Harlem.
Well, again, everybody comes from a Beale Street, a black neighborhood. It's a metaphor.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to get at. So that being said, it's a love
story.
That
would have said it if Malcolm X Boulevard could talk.
Yeah, but that's only because you're a white guy.
What's this rock routine where he goes?
There's a Malcolm X Boulevard in every city, and that's always the worst.
No, street. There's a Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Martin Luther, right.
And the guy who preached peace. It's one of the most violent streets in the right.
So not to prove you're a racist, but you were thinking of Martin Luther King when you were thinking of Malcolm X.
No, I was thinking of Harlem, where there is actually Malcolm X Boulevard up in Harlem. I think it takes place.
Well, all right. That being said, it's a love story. It's a beautiful love story. It's a love story about a boy and a girl who knew each other since kids, and they grew up and fell in love. Perfect story. Except he's black, and he gets accused of a crime he did not commit and ends up going to jail. And it impacts everybody's life, you know?
Wait, she's a white girl?
No, she's not. She's not. She's black, too. It's a beautiful story for a lot of reasons. And at the time it was written, there weren't a lot of black love stories, period. You know, but to understand what it is to be a good person, to be a person who tries to do the right thing, and everything in society is stacked against you, you know, that was pretty strong. So what I have to say about the film is, while it's a great film, it's really well done, really well acted, beautiful score, the only flaw I think it could have, and it really depends on who sees the film, because I've spoken to people now and they're completely divided. You know, I've spoke to one person, Jack Rico, as a matter of fact. He felt that it didn't have enough impact. And, you know, the things in the film didn't resonate with him, I think, the way they would have resonated with me or a black person.
So he's wrongly accused. He goes to jail. She's pregnant with his kid.
Correct.
And she's trying desperately to do everything in her power to get him out of jail.
Right.
And, you know...
Sounds like it's not dramatic enough.
If you compare it to Moonlight, which was a really innovative film in many levels, that it was three different, you know, parts
you know,
of the kid's life. And, I mean, it was a great movie. I mean, it won the Academy Award for Best Picture.
It did.
Sounds like a bigger story, and this sounds like a smaller story.
Well,
is
this,
that accurate?
This is,
and it takes place in 1960?
Yes and no.
What?
1964, something like that. It's yes and no, okay? And depends on how you see. Let me just say this about Moonlight. You know, Moonlight, there are a lot of things that you see in Moonlight that you've seen in lots of other movies. Okay, but it is the storytelling, it is the filmmaking that really, and the performances and everything that really made that film, it kind of casts a spell on you. And he goes for the same thing here. The music, and it takes its time telling you the story. And it's a very subtle, beautiful story. But for the things it deals with, it's sort of similar, I would say, maybe to 12 Years a Slave, where you're telling a beautiful story about something that's very ugly.
Or loving.
Loving, I see I have a lot of issues with Loving.
Okay, sorry.
We'll get to that when we talk about Green Book. I have a lot of issues with Loving.
I got a lot of issues with Loving.
I'll bring it up when we talk about Green Book. But, so, I say all that to say that it's definitely worth seeing. You know, the performances are great. You know,
well,
I
let
think
me ask you this before I cast my vote.
Yes, Regina King.
Moonlighting was Barry Jenkins on his A game. Is this Barry Jenkins on his A game, or is this an important... well-intentioned movie that isn't as good as Moonlighting?
I think, okay, and it's sort of like when you see a movie, they finally make a movie out of something, or you finally see a movie that, you know, you never saw, that it's a classic, and you watch it, and you're like, well, I've seen this a bunch of times. I think because they never made Beale Street, and now they're finally making it, a lot of the themes that are in Beale Street have been told before, and maybe more impactfully. So,
For example...
Well, just the idea of having young man in jail.
Movie example.
Movie example would be Dirty Harry. If you watch Dirty Harry now,
you're comparing Dirty Harry to Beale Street?
I am. I'm because of the genre. You know, we're talking about historical dramas. The first Dirty Harry.
There's only one black character, to my knowledge, in the entire.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying. I'm using, let's say, racially charged drama versus, you know, cop films.
Oh.
You watch Dirty Harry, it's been imitated so many times, it doesn't seem so original.
Can I jump in with what I think you're really saying is there hasn't been a black love story like this. There have been a million white love stories like this.
No.
But... No.
I'm saying that there have been black love stories like this. I'm saying there have been stories that a lot of the themes here have been touched upon in other works, in other films. So it doesn't seem as fresh here.
Oh, I see. Okay,
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I think it has going against it there. It's finally getting made. Whereas if it had gotten made 20, 30 years ago, it would have been a lot
very
more
interesting.
That's what I'm saying.
All right, so what's your vote,
Neil?
How
the performances?
The performances are great. The performances are great. They're really, really nuanced.
There's somebody in it in a supporting role that they're touting.
Regina King. Regina King should definitely. She definitely gives
an
Oscar-worthy
nomination.
Oscar-worthy performance.
And she plays the mother of the guy or the girl?
The mother of the girl, actually, who. Again, she's known the boy her whole life. I don't want to give away too much.
I mean, I've seen her. She's always good.
Show her the Oscar.
What's that?
Show her the Oscar.
Yeah, I don't think she'll win, but she should definitely be nominated.
She'll be nominated.
It should up her
Bill's
ante.
One of Bill's outlets, GoldDerby.com, is touting her as a very...
She's really good.
A very really good. Odds-on favorite to get nominated for that.
Definitely. And the scores, I have to say...
Okay, based on what you said, I'll see the movie.
Sure.
Bill Bergoglio,
yeah,
sure.
I'll see it. All right. So I'll see it simply for Regina King because I really like Regina King.
She's really good.
And
she's really good.
Oscar,
go ahead. So you'll see that, and you've seen Green Book, and you've seen Widows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill Bergoglio and I saw Widows together.
Our question for Mike is,
I was disappointed at Widows.
Why isn't so Green Book? They thought was going to get great. It won the National Board of Review, which is normally a curse. I hope it can overcome that curse.
Yeah.
Because nothing since I don't know for like 10 years has gone on to win the Oscar, but so it won there last night. And as we're recording this, But Universal's a little disappointed with Green Book that it hasn't.
Well, you know,
it was supposed to be the big magic Thanksgiving movie that was going to bring black and white audiences to the theaters
in
droves.
Interesting, you use the word magic. Okay, part of what the problem with Green Book, and first of all, let me just say, I'm in the minority here. Pardon the pun. I loved Green Book. I really liked it.
I loved that.
I really liked the movie, but you know, black audiences are rejecting it outright, and they have three or four big reasons why, and I understand those reasons.
What are the reasons?
One, this falls into the trope of what they call the magical Negro. And do you know about this trope?
Yeah, sure. Okay. We've talked about it before. Right,
so why don't you explain to our audience what the magical Negro is?
If you don't know what the magical Negro is, the magical Negro is this character who is essentially a black character who in some way has the ability to transform the white characters into being better people. You know, a great example is The Green Mile or Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg, where she's literally magical. So it's a trope. It allows...
But in Green Book, they transform each other. I would make that argument.
No, you're right.
And Vigo transforms Mahershala Ali's character as much as Mahershala Ali transforms.
I'm not saying that this is how I feel. They
both come with a set of Vigo's character's got racial prejudices, and Mahershala Ali's got a whole. I'm not going to give it away. He's got a whole other bunch of stuff that
I thought black audiences were resenting that it's what we also call a white savior movie.
Well, now you see, that's the second thing.
Okay,
white savior, which again is another trope that has been done a lot, and they feel that and of course the black character is minimalized and underwritten, whereas you know Don Shirley is clearly a much much more towering and interesting figure than this Italian bodyguard guy.
Do realize that the story was written by the Italian bodyguard guy's
know the son.
And right. It's really the story of, you know, his father who went on this adventure for a couple of months and learned how screwed up racism is.
I will say what I've always said, which is true doesn't make it right, and true doesn't make it a good movie.
In this case,
I think true does make it a good movie, but go ahead.
Well, I'm telling you, you asked me what the issues...
It was written by Mahershala Ali's son or his character's
well,
son.
You're asking what the issues are, what black folks have, the issues they have.
All right, I'm
These
sorry.
Are the issues.
Is he Lisa Rossman at this? Because you're not letting him finish a sentence.
It's okay. But I'm saying that those are a couple of the big issues, and that Don Shirley, and he's minimized, he's not as well developed a character, and he really is only there to further the plot of how this white guy becomes this great guy. So those are the issues that a lot of black folks have with it. Now, I, on the other hand, don't see it that way. I feel that it is a mistake for black audiences to expect for a white filmmaker, a white writer, or the studio to tell our stories. It is not the Don Shirley story. It is the story of this bodyguard.
That's exactly what I'm
saying. And it, like you said, it's written by his son. And it's only a small piece from either of their lives, especially
right.
Don Shirley.
It's a two-month road
but trip. It's what a good story should be. It's a transformational moment for these characters. They have a character arc. They are different by the end of the movie, both of them. And I thought what's interesting, the most interesting thing to me about it, or one of the most interesting, is the director.
Peter Farrelly.
Yeah, no, Peter Farrelly.
Talked
about that.
Now, Peter Farrelly is
Dumb and
again,
Dumber, Kingpin.
Right. And what comedy does better than anything, especially in the time we're living now, comedy makes us look at ourselves. It makes us, it
you
makes
make
social
a serious
comedy.
Serious topic that people don't want to look at palatable.
Absolutely.
I always
same
say.
Science fiction is the same way.
I always say, with rare exceptions, that all movies should have interject some humor somewhere along the line. We had this conversation a number of weeks ago on the podcast, and boy, Erased, I thought it took itself way too seriously, and it's an important subject, but you could have had somebody in that gay conversion, Pray Away the Gay Therapy group, some kid that was funny, like that Chloe Grace Moretz movie, which tackled the same thing, which lightened it up occasionally. I mean, if you're going to give me 2 hours of just deadly serious stuff, it's like I'm in a college lecture. So humor makes it more amenable to audiences.
I concur.
Saying making it a comedy, but I'm just saying to interject, give me a break a little bit somewhere along the line and go like, yeah, that
Well, you see,
this
well,
weekly
that's what I
Neil Rosen digression is brought to you by LaCroix.
But that's what I thought was interesting to me about Green Book, that a Peter Farrelly would pick something like this as a project he wants to get behind and direct. The humor is definitely there. And
it's
I think
laugh out loud
of,
funny, like in places.
Definitely. But and again, yeah,
but
I feel
all, and it's all coming from the Vigo character, because the Mahershala Ali character once in a while is funny, but I think 90% of the
pretty funny. He's like the straight funny. Man. He's the straight
he's
man.
He's the straight guy.
He's the straight man. But what I loved about the movie was that sense of humor. But it's tackling. There's some heavy issues in there that are being brought up, without giving away surprises in the film. And
well, that's why when I said Mahershala is dealing with a bunch of stuff himself,
exactly.
I don't want to say what
exactly.
those
I don't
things
say
are.
What it is.
But nonetheless,
and now that
he is
a film in itself. And that's what people feel, a lot of black audiences feel like they just touched upon something so big. Da, da, da.
So let's agree on one thing.
What?
The thing that would change their mind is if they saw the movie. In your opinion.
I think 50% of the people who were against the movie didn't even see it. But at the same time, I went into it with a different set of expectations. I'm not going into it looking for it's not the Don Shirley story. Don Shirley's a great character, and there could be a movie about Don Shirley. And the Viggo Mortensen character could be a minor element, but this is not that movie.
Yeah, you could have a whole movie
about Don Shirley.
On the Don Shirley story.
Absolutely.
It could be.
And he deserves
how this guy
to have
a became
movie.
A piano prodigy and a master pianist, and how he lives in an apartment on top of Carnegie Hall, which is literally
that's
about 10
fascinating.
Feet from where we're sitting right now. And I'm like, that to
well,
me...
Well, actually, it was in New Orleans, but okay.
No, it was shot in New Orleans.
Right.
But in the movie, he lives in an apartment on top of Carnegie Hall.
Yeah.
To me...
That's fascinating.
That unto itself is could be a 20-minute segment in the Don Shirley story.
As
but,
Spock would say,
but this isn't the
fascinating.
This is a look at a two-month road trip. That's what it is.
That hopefully everyone will go see. I mean, I'm not sure everyone would go see the Don Shirley story. Sorry. I mean, I'd be interested to see it.
I'll be honest. I think, and it's interesting, and this is the last thing, because your wife is really part of, we had a conversation about this before you came in. And
my wife, Bill McKay.
Yeah, your wife.
Support.
And this is,
the brains
again,
of the outfit.
Going to the other part of what a lot of black audiences have an issue with, who is this film for? This film is not for black audiences.
It's a crowd-pleasing mass appeal.
Listen to me. This is a film for white audiences. This is a film for white audiences to maybe open their perspective, open their minds about things.
To remind you, says a black man who enjoyed the movie.
Well, I'm saying that's what I think. That's what, you know.
Excuse me, Mike. You don't think it's for all audiences?
Yes and no.
If you put black audiences in there?
Yes and no.
Can't we all just get along, Mike?
Obviously not. Obviously not. Like I said, I'm in the minority. I met a number of black critics at the party we were at last night, and I said, what do you think of the movie? Hated it. They hated it.
Hated it? One of our colleagues.
I don't think I asked Wilson what he thought. Okay, but,
colleague of ours.
We'll talk about the party we were at last night, because that's
but
what
anyway,
we're talking
so
about.
So I say all that to say that, yes, it turns black people off because of all the things I mentioned that are happening
but you're
in there.
Saying, but wrongly. You're saying.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. I'm not saying they're wrong. I just don't agree.
Well, they haven't
they're
seen
not wrong.
It.
They
You've have seen it.
No, the people who have seen it, who hated it,
oh,
who
I'm
are
sorry.
Black.
Okay.
Or,
okay.
You know, we're at okay. their party. I understand why they hated it. I didn't hate it because I embraced it in a different way.
All right.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I love the movie.
I don't know.
So does Bill McCuddy. And Bill Bregoli does.
Bill Bregoli, did you see it?
I loved it, but I admired it for certain things. The comedy was fun. The Italians were just so hilarious.
Yes.
Hashtag Italians are hilarious.
I know. You grew up with people like that.
Well, I grew up in the Bronx, very close to the neighborhood where the Viggo Mortensen character. I know all those people. Not the actual people, but I know so many people like that. And it was just And I sent a friend of mine and his wife, who I grew up with in that neighborhood, and he came back and said the same thing. Yeah, it's like we know those guys. You know what I mean? Okay.
Those were white people, weren't they, Neil?
They were.
I can
I will
give you
tell
a very
you
simple reason. That it
by the Arthur Avenue.
Go huge at the box office this week. Very simple arithmetical reason. It's only in 1,063 theaters.
No, I know, but they go by per screen average, and
they were expecting a little
more than it got.
Yeah.
I will tell you one thing, which is I was glowing after this movie as a stupid white guy, apparently. And and I will tell you that the more I thought about it, the more I thought that the Peter Farrelly contribution here, as good as it is there's a little too much comedy in it, maybe, to be a serious... considered dramatic movie for the Oscars, let's say, and that I never felt, and I this is my only dig on the movie, that those guys were in any serious trouble.
Well, the stakes. Yeah, I agree with you on that, and that could easily be seen as a flaw, but I don't think that that's what he was going for.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I don't think that that's what he was going for. And
I think it's about the transformational.
I think it's about the transformational.
The transformational, I agree, but all the bad things that happened to Mahershala, I go, it's going to be okay. I had this grin on my face for the whole movie going, I love this movie. I feel bad for the bad things that are happening to this guy. He makes a very important phone call at one point to somebody so very high in the that you're like, that's great. I love it. But it convinced me in that moment, nothing bad's going to happen to
this guy. Well, you know what it is in a way, and I could jump on what you're saying to say, in a way, it's a Disney-fied storytelling of, you know, people breaking down racial barriers. It's very Disney.
All right, so let's move on. Since we've discussed Green Book at length, I want to go to Bill McCuddy's question to Mike Sargent about Widows. Why is Widows underperforming at the box office? Why this movie? I remember getting the full preview issue of Entertainment Weekly, and they pick a couple of movies to really promote. You know, there's like 80, 90 movies. But they pick like only a few movies, and they really go heavy. These are the movies. And Widows was one of those movies. And they were saying Widows, Academy Awards, blah, blah, blah. Now, Bill Bregoli and I saw Widows, and we were kind of underwhelmed with the movie. You know, I think there's a lot of plot holes in the movie, and it's kind of a mess.
It's also pretty long. I saw it with my wife, and my wife loved it. And I will also say, before we get Mike to jump in here, that, like, a lot of expectation was on Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen could do whatever he wanted after 12 Years a Slave.
Let me just to the audience, Steve McQueen, not the actor, is the director of 12 Years a Slave.
Right. I think the audience knows Steve McQueen, the actor, has been dead for a long time. But anyway.
I love The Great Escape.
We love when you talk down to the audience. Anyway, so Steve McQueen could do anything. Then I heard he's doing a heist movie, and I'm like, oh, cool. This is going to be the greatest heist movie, or at least something different is going to happen. And then all of the things that happen in a heist movie happen in this, so there's no real big revelation there. The big revelation is this sense of Chicago and this sense of all these characters.
No, the big revelation is something. There's a twist that happens.
That's different.
The big
that's a function of the story. But I was kind of bored with this movie.
A movie about loss, really. I mean, all these women have lost something, and movies about loss aren't
the
kind of thing
where
the
heist isn't even really even. The focus of the movie, when they actually do the heist, is Bill McCuddy, I think, pointed out.
Yeah, it's kind of a tacked-on ending.
Or maybe you pointed that out. I don't know.
All right, Mike,
so
jump in here.
Tell
the stupid white guys what we missed.
I only have theories. I think it's three factors. I think one, just talking about the movie itself.
What do you think of the movie?
I was going to say, talking about the movie itself, I loved how it started. It started where it did this thing where you see all this heist going on. You don't know who anybody is. They're all well-known actors, though. And then we keep cutting from what is essentially like a 5-minute heist to flashback, so we get to know all these characters. So by the time we're deep into the heist, we care about everybody and we know who everybody is. And I thought that was well done. Okay. But then what it's really about is that these women have to come together and then fulfill this heist that the men had, you know, botched and what was going on. And then it's fun, but you know, and the twist and everything, that was fun too. And I thought it was good, but far from great. And I enjoyed it. But like probably both you, Neil, and Bill Bregoli are saying that there were definitely some plot holes. There are definitely some when you're thinking, you got to go, wait a minute. You know, so there's a lot of that. So I think overall the movie's good.
What do you
it's
think
fun.
Of her performance?
I think her performance, I think she's always good, but I don't think there's anything of a stretch for her. I don't think she was, I don't think she was stretching here in any way.
No.
I mean, this is Lord of, you know, she was good. Just like you said, Julia Roberts in this thing, like she was Julia Roberts. She
also, that character didn't seem like she was in the same.
We're talking Viola Davis.
Yeah,
Viola right.
Davis, Viola's right. character didn't seem like she was actually in the same neighborhood as the other women in it.
Well,
she wasn't.
Yeah.
She was like, really liked.
I think that.
What's the actress that you liked in the supporting one? The one who was. Became basically
the blonde. Yeah, what's her name?
Polish-born
tall
actress.
One? Okay, pause.
Yeah. Whose mother?
We're not gonna make Bill look bad. So ask him again, and she'll know. It's Haley.
Who's the mother? Who's the mother? The
Jackie Weaver. Jackie Weaver. But the girl, because I loved her too. She's smoking hot in this movie.
Wasn't she? She's smoking really hot. Exciting.
Smoking hot.
What, the actress? Yeah, DeBecky. DeBecky, Elizabeth DeBecky.
Yeah, Elizabeth DeBecky. Right. Okay.
Well, you like Bill, the
Elizabeth DeBecky, yeah.
Yeah, whose mother, Jackie Weaver, gives her, like, probably the most horrendous advice.
Yeah, go find a sugar daddy.
Be a hooker. Well,
I tell you what I think, though. Just the last thing I'll say about the movie, and then I'll get to why I think it's not doing well, is that I think probably why this worked so well as a miniseries was you get a chance to kind of look at all these people's lives.
It's based on a BBC miniseries. Right. It's based on a BBC miniseries. Steve McQueen saw as a kid.
Right, and getting into these people's lives, this probably would have been better as
a limited series. So it's truncated.
But it wouldn't have changed. It wouldn't have changed a hokey, very late in the movie twist that is,
but
that if it had worked, everybody in the audience would have been, oh my God, that's the greatest twist I've ever seen.
But you could have set that up a lot better if you had more time.
Did we all see that coming? I saw that coming.
You could have set that up with the way that... With long form storytelling.
Did you see it coming? I saw it coming.
No, I didn't.
Did you?
You don't get an actor like that. Yeah, I kind of.
Three out of four.
All right, that's giving too much information. Okay.
I kind of saw the twist coming. But, you know, again, it's a genre movie. It's fun. It had to do a few things. But I think the reason it's
Colin
not doing
Farrell's
well,
whole subplot with running for councilman.
That made no
and
sense.
Like,
but again, that's what I'm saying. A lot of this, it
not
was
necessary.
Truncated. I think it was too truncated.
Robert
I think
Duvall's
it's
movie
deserves,
for like 3
I see.
Minutes. He probably filmed
more
all the scenes in one day.
That's my take.
If we throw, what Mike's, I respect Mike's thing, which is if you throw out the twist that none of us liked or thought was a little crazy, if the movie had more time to breathe and tell us all about these stories, which it obviously did in an 8-hour miniseries or however long it was on BBC, then you're more invested in
it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll play this game a different way. We've all seen this movie from based on this conversation, Mike. I would now watch the BBC miniseries.
Well,
I think that sounds interesting.
I'd want to see both. But the reason I think it's not doing well is because I don't think anybody cares. And I challenge you. Tell me who is...
What do you mean nobody cares?
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares about the
but
story.
But if you're going to weigh in...
Look, about any of it.
Weigh in on Black America. Are they upset that... Viola Davis and Liam Neeson have a relationship?
I don't know a woman that doesn't like Liam Neeson. My daughter likes Liam Neeson.
Well, he has a special set of skills.
But my question to all of you is, name a black actress that can open a film.
Oh.
And has and in history, name one.
Whitney
Diana
opened,
Ross. Back
Whitney
in the day.
Whitney opened.
Come on,
what film? Mahogany.
Mahogany. I was just going to say Mahogany.
Sure, Mahogany.
At the peak, she was a musician.
And what about the Billie Holiday movie? What was the
Lady one? Sings the Blues?
Lady Sings the Blues.
Well, I don't. That didn't open.
That didn't do
it.
Well. Didn't, the
no, but Whitney.
Well.
Whitney opened the Bodyguard. Whitney definitely opened.
And that was with Kevin Costner. Okay, let's come on.
Both.
Whitney did other movies. The Preacher's Wife didn't do bangbusters. Point I'm making is
Whitney. I'd
we
say Whitney.
Are as much as it would be great. Okay, but we're not at that point where there's a black actress who can open a film.
Wait Oprah? A second. Wait a second. I know one who can.
Who?
Medea.
Okay, well, she could top out at 28
there you
million.
Go, very
but
good.
That's my point. My point is,
Halle Berry opened Cell.
It'd be yes, Medea, right? She opened so well that Eddie and Martin Lawrence had to do a fat black lady in a suit thing. But all I'm saying is
that's great.
I just that actually should be like a meme.
Movies open at number one. They really do those.
And they top out at about 28,000. But again, they're up 28 million. But it's going to a specific audience. So yes, I say all that to say, we're just not there, and we're just not there. It's similar to Ghostbusters. We're just not there where people are going out to see. Nobody in that
the
movie,
the female version,
as much
of...
as you like DeBecky, nobody in that movie is like sexy. You know, most female stars who can open a film at some point in their career, they were considered a sex symbol.
Well, would Ocean's 8 can be considered, was that successful? I mean, there's
had like 5 A-list actresses in there.
Was that movie financially successful?
It was decent.
Yeah.
It was decent, definitely.
It was expensive, but it made money.
Very expensive. Exactly. It made money, but it wasn't like, you know. So that's part of it. And I think the other thing is that the time that it's coming out now, it's sort of, okay, if we're having all these highbrow movies come out now, and that's
how many women could open a film? You're talking about black actresses.
Well, there
how
it
many,
is.
Forget about
exactly.
Take black out of it.
That's
how
right.
many actresses, whatever
my
color,
point exactly.
can open a film?
My
I
point
mean,
exactly.
can Meryl Streep really open a film?
Listen,
I have friends
who are filmmakers, and they will tell you straight up when you're trying to raise money for a film, there are very few actresses.
I mean, Tom Cruise can open a film. Liam Neeson.
Who you can get financing because they're in the film.
Yeah, so how many actresses, period, can open a film?
There you go. That's my
third time you've asked the question, and we're still.
But I haven't gotten an answer.
We're still stumped. No,
I haven't gotten
an answer.
Madea.
Madea. That's right. All right. So
what else is opening this?
All right. So anyway. So let's talk about Roma. Now, there's a whole, before we get into Roma, I'm going to say that.
So let's not talk about Roma.
there's a whole thing going on with Roma that I find really interesting, and that is that Netflix has reinvented the way people see movies. I mean, here's a movie that people are. Well, people, you know, it used to be straight to DVD was a negative thing where it would be like, yeah, never got open theatrically. It went straight to DVD. But now if it's going straight to Netflix, they're having the top directors and the top stars and the top screenwriters and the top cinematographers and they're multi-million dollar movies. And you can watch them on your TV. You do not have to go out to a theater to see them. And I mean, there's a, you know, so.
Let me remind you that this too may pass. This too may pass.
Well, Roma is
Netflix isn't making any money as we sit here. They're writing a lot of big checks and they're buying a lot of big movies.
And they don't tell you how many people watch their things.
Well, Roma is a movie, and I'm really wondering if that stigma, if the Academy, they're saying that Roma has tremendous odds to not only get an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture, but Alfonso Cuarón, who directed, is an odds-on favorite to win Best Director, and the movie has a decent shot at winning Best Picture. But I'm wondering if the Academy will discriminate against the movie because it's going straight to Netflix and on television.
Well, you keep saying straight to Netflix. It's not. It can't.
Oh, so it's a two-week run and two
series. Okay, but that's plenty of movies do that. Plenty of movies just make a two-week run.
Where it did open, it did really well.
So which one of you guys wants to, as I said on our TV show, take the lead and tell us about Roma? Bill, would you like to do that?
Bill McCuddy should do it.
No, I can do. Well, it's about
a Bill Bergoglio.
No, I'm kidding.
It focuses
on
a maid to
like J-Lo and Maid of Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. Except that the family.
I've seen this all before.
She's a maid for a well-to-do doctor and his wife.
J-Lo used to be able to open a movie, by the way.
Right. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
She, however, is. Doesn't even speak Spanish as her first language, the maid. She speaks a native dialect. She's actually from a whole different caste system than the rest of the family. But she's looked down upon as the maid. And you follow her life and struggles as well as the woman she works for. And 2 hours later, you wake up and go, oh, it's over?
And this is in Mexico City in 1972 or 3. And it's basically Alfonso's.
There's a revolution in the background. And
right.
It's,
yeah. It literally takes a revolution for this movie to have something happen. I mean, it's one of those films that starts and stops and doesn't have the three-act structure that we would normally see. And it's really a love story from this director to this woman who raised him. Other than that, I think it's one of the biggest, like...
Snooze fest?
Emperor's New Clothes kind of movies that a famous director has been allowed to make. And in black and white, we should say, which will make it
with English subtitles,
which will make it even more commercial. As I've been saying this year, if you can see only one black and white film with subtitles that's foreign, see Cold War. But that's a different discussion. This is a really, really tough sell. Whether it went straight to Netflix or had 2 week run here or there, there's no real story there. It's just about this kid's life in a certain period of time, and when it's done, it's done. There are some incredibly dramatic scenes, including the birth of a child that is shown, this revolution you mentioned a moment ago that breaks out in the middle of everything else that's happening to this family. The doctor father, I'm not giving too much away, leaves the family, and they have to deal with all this. But to me, it's a lot of not there. And
would you call it self-indulgent?
I don't love it as much as everybody else.
You call it self-indulgent on the turn? I have not seen it yet. From the point of view of the director to, like, you know, it's very near and dear to his heart. But, you know, there are a lot of directors who do this kind of stuff, and it's like, well, this might be meaningful and important to you, but for an audience, it's kind of like this is a little self-indulgent.
That was my experience.
Yeah.
And by the way, I went to a Q&A with him the other night, and he said, when somebody said, Do you want this scene on a big screen? Because everyone was saying, well, you have to see this on a big screen. He said, listen, most of the people, 90% of the people who've seen one of my movies, no matter how famous it is, see it on a small screen.
Now,
so I'm okay with that.
Cuarón movie, Gravity. Not only do you need to see that on a big screen,
you need to see it
in
IMAX.
You need to see that in IMAX.
Right.
So it's very interesting that he would make
like
that
First
comment.
Man, because, which I'll give a quick side plug to.
Because you don't, you know, you don't. I'm it's very interesting that he said that because, yeah, I don't even want to see Gravity like on a regular movie screen.
No, I've seen it on HBO when I'm flipping around and I watch 5 minutes of it and I go, what the hell did I like about this movie? Okay,
right.
So.
It's all about being immersed in the movie.
Mike, you saw Roma. Did you love it?
I saw Roma. Well, okay, two things let me say.
Did you fall under the spell?
Let me say a couple things contextually. One, what you guys were talking about in terms of Netflix and how things have changed release. And there's still pushback because in Mexico, the major chains will not show this film.
Why?
It's only playing.
Because of the revolution?
Well, not because of the revolution, but because it's Netflix, and Netflix won't give them a 3-month window. So they refuse to show his film. So all the major multiplexes in Mexico, it's only playing in like 40 art house theaters in his home country. So that's interesting. But I what I liked about the movie is that, you know, as film critics and as film goers, we forget that there's more than one kind of movie, you know, and there are movies that, like, there have been a lot of experimental films that's just sound and colors and there's no narrative at all. You know, there are a lot, there's a room for a lot of that. And he's a director.
Nobody goes to those either.
Well, this is true. But he's a director who has earned the ability to do his big art film.
Yes.
Which a number of directors.
100% agree with that.
He's earned the ability to do that. And I definitely think this is not a movie for everybody. I think it is beautifully shot. It's clearly a loving portrait of this woman that raised him. And everything's a backdrop. There is no narrative. There's no real story. Things, you know, in a normal movie, a character has things happen and they take action. In this movie, things just happen to everybody. And everybody just kind of deals with what happens.
It makes the point to me that, I mean, I'll devote myself to watching a movie uninterrupted on a big television screen. But most people that watch these things on TV, you know, they're multi. My daughter, you know, unless I take her to a movie theater, she's on the computer, she's looking at the phone, you know, texting.
Unless you speak Spanish, you can't do that with this
movie. And this is the kind of movie where I think you would need, you know, from what you're describing to me, you need to see
attention.
This like in a darkened movie theater where it has your full attention and there's no
because honestly, there's no reason to stay with it unless you are held captive in a movie.
Right.
I mean,
in my opinion,
screener at home, then if I get bored, maybe I would glance down at my phone.
Definitely would glance down at your phone. But what Bill McCuddy said is the question is: Do you fall under its spell? You know, which is what
you.
It definitely casts a spell. I will give it that.
Yeah,
I will give it that.
And that's what Moonlight did. You
did
know,
you,
when you were talking
Bill?
Before.
Yeah.
Yes, kind of like Bill said, it casts a spell, but it didn't last long. To be honest.
By the way, quickly, you said you'd get to your problem with Loving when we talked about Green Book, and you didn't.
No, I didn't. Well, the problem I had with Loving,
I had lots of problems with them.
I had my big problem with Loving. And I didn't have this problem with Green Book. With Loving is that, okay, you've got the story of this couple who changed, you know, the way
the Supreme Court decision based on this couple.
Based on this couple. It's wow, okay. And when you see the movie, you see that it's really the woman, the wife, the black wife, who really did all the moves, went after the lawyer, did everything. He just was like, okay, whatever she says. And you see this black woman, okay, who's pregnant, okay, get thrown in jail over a weekend, like she's in jail, she's pregnant, she's this horrible injustice. Cut to the white husband missing her, and I felt like he's not the character, he's not who this movie should be about. But it was a white writer, a white director, a white filmmaker who made this movie. And he, again, coming back to who's the movie for, you know, that's the audience that white audience is who he cares about. Who he's catering to, consciously or unconsciously, that's who he's catering to, not the black. Because I sat there going, oh my God, you know.
Who is that actress? Because she was luminous.
No, she's great. She's I forget her name. She's great.
And Joel Egerton's husband, right?
Especially when you
right?
see her, like she's in that,
right?
that TV series that, what's his name, produced based on the comic book. Oh man, it's based on a graphic novel and comedian.
Don't know.
It's losing my head. All right, I'll look it up and I'll tell you what she's in.
This You Better Google moment is brought to you by LaCroix.
You're talking about Ruth Negga.
Ruth Negga, right. Ruth Negga.
And by the way, we should mention to people who didn't see Loving, we're talking about a movie from 2 years ago. Right. This isn't something that's current. This is something, and wasn't Joel Egerton the white guy?
Yes.
Joel Egerton was the white guy.
Right.
And let me just see, what else was Ruth Negga in? She was in this series that...
Ruth Negga.
See, everybody on a podcast isn't that smart, and this should encourage everyone listening to have their own podcast.
Preacher.
Oh, Preacher.
She's in Preacher playing such a different character.
Right.
It's just, that Seth you Rogen realize did. What that range
Seth
he has.
Rogen and his...
Seth produce, Rogen. That's yeah, what I was trying to think of. Seth partner. Rogen yeah. And his producing partner.
So we're running long, so we're going to save wildlife for next time.
But it's the holiday season, but the studios and some of the publicity houses are having their big parties, and one that we always look forward to is the Fox Searchlight party, because they're one of the few studios that invite the stars from their major motion pictures. And this year that was Melissa McCarthy from Will You Ever Forgive Me, right, and Richard E. Grant. Richard E. Grant actually showed up at the party last night.
Yes. Did you see Melissa McCarthy yesterday?
She did not come to the party.
I did not see her.
No. Isle of Dogs, which nobody came, but one of the dogs was there.
And the animator, the guy who did the dog.
And this makes it sound like I'm goofing on this party, which is one of my favorite parties of the year, because it doesn't matter if the stars come or not. It's like a bonus. Natalie Portman came a couple of years ago. For Jackie and Greta
Guillermo
Gerwig.
Del Toro was there,
and Yorgos Lanthimos, who are,
but this year not so many stars. But Richard E. Grant was lovely, and my wife called him the cat killer from that movie, and he talked to her for 20 minutes. So that was our high point. But it's one of those times where we all get to see each other. So many of the people you've heard on this podcast. Karen James and
David Fear, two people that did our show Talking Pictures, who both thought that Roma was their favorite movie of the year.
Sometimes. Yeah. Well, Dave Carger, I saw the other day, said that's his number one and Cold War is his number two. But so we love to disagree with some people. But anyway, all of us get to meet in one room. The drinks are great. The food is great. And then from there was a Roma party at what used to be the Four Seasons, now called the Pool, which is literally a swimming pool.
I was there.
Or a fountain in the middle of a giant Philip Glass designed room. Well, if you thought it was rocking until midnight or beyond,
it was rocked till 1:30 a.m. when I left.
Let me tell you.
Yeah, I know. That restaurant is really good.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. And I heard Cuba Gooding Jr. I don't know, all these stars came to the party last night.
Jim Jarmusch is there. Sarita Chowdhury was there. At least a half a dozen other people I'm not even thinking of now. And I'm like, what are they all doing? Nick Kroll was there.
Right. And Alfonso, and
Caron didn't come. He had a family emergency.
Really?
Yes. That's what the publicist told me.
All right.
So all these people were there. I was kind of amazed.
It rocked and it was fun. It did. And we wish you'd been there with us.
Neil was there.
I was there.
But yeah, I think you left early because it really, I was there 1:30 in the morning. It was rocking.
You know what's sad is they ask Neil to leave because the room is just, the room goes down. Basically.
I left a little before midnight.
Okay.
So did the witching hour?
It did. It did get more crowded.
Well, there are lots of lunches and dinners happening over the next few weeks and have happened in the last few weeks. And we will update you on all of those when we talk to you
again. On our wildlife.
There you go.
On wildlife. One was Jake
Gyllenhaal.
So how do
we hit you up on Twitter, Mike?
I'm Mike on Screen.
Mike on Screen.
The best Twitter name on the planet. I'm just at Bill McCuddy.
And I'm at Neil Rosen Apples. And reach out and become Bill McCauley's
friend. And if you
want
to be Bill McCauley's friend, go to Facebook.
There you go.
That's right.
So next week we'll do wildlife and we'll do a whole bunch of other stuff. And as always, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. And we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.